Hello, welcome back to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker. Today on the show, I am talking to the founder of Kestin Hair. So, Kestin Hair, based now in his hometown of Edinburgh, Scotland. The brand was created to redefine modern Scottish design by blending innovation with tradition. They weave in references from their heritage and homeland, combining integral details with other areas of inspiration, including vintage, workwear, military, sports, and outdoor. And now, to talk about the brand in his own words, is the founder, creative director, Kestin Hair.
Well, I am Kestin Hair, which gets really confusing, and the brand's called Kestin. So I'm the person Kestin Hair, and I'm the creative director, founder of a brand called Kestin, which is handy, you know. I've got a menswear brand based in Edinburgh, we've been going since 2014. And we make really good quality menswear that is built to last, is inspired by lots of different things, which I suppose we'll probably get into as we go along.
Yeah, please. I mean, we were just talking off mic how you spent around 7 years in London. Was that before you moved up to Edinburgh? And what was it that you learned in London towards the brand?
I think, you know, we were just discussing just now, you know, when I first started out, I studied in Northumbria and Newcastle, where I left Edinburgh to go and do fashion design and marketing. And there was like a year placement where I went down to London and worked down there, because it was always seen at that time that you had to go and work down in London and cut your teeth down there. And if you ever wanted to start a brand, that was the place to do it. I went down to London for my year placement, but then I ended up going back and working down there afterwards. I was in London probably for about 7 years on and off, working for different people, and I love London. I still love London now. It's almost like a second home, but you know, home is Edinburgh, and we came back when my daughter was born, so we've been back now for almost 13 years, I think, in Edinburgh. And initially had to kind of spend a lot of time kind of going between the two, kind of commuting up and down. And I was freelancing for a few different brands to try and then try to start my own brand at the same time. So it was kind of trying to get money in to live. And it's that kind of balance, I suppose, with anybody goes on their own, is that kind of, you know, you need sort of 3 days a week doing consultancy design work to then pluck up enough courage to, you know, jump into to fully doing your own brand and you know, getting it to a point where you can financially do that as well.
The leap of faith, as it were.
Yeah, the leap of faith into it. So, you know, and it was a long time ago now, or it feels a long time ago. And things were very different back then. You know, it wasn't, you know, there wasn't just the kind of technology that we have now, where brands can start out and suddenly they can be on Instagram selling or shop, you know, can get a Shopify account. You know, it was, you know, back then it was very different. It was you know, you became almost like a wholesale brand by default, because you didn't have your own store at that point. And right. You know, I was making jackets in the East End of London, and you had to make 50 of them, and you weren't going to sell, you know, 50 of them yourself, so you had to sell them to somebody else. So you had to go to a trade show, and you then you know, I was lucky enough to get a few good stores, you know, that picked up with the brand, and you sold to them, and then you knew somebody that knew somebody that could maybe build your website. You know, it was like revolutionary, you know, right. Some back then, really, you know, oh, so I know somebody that knows somebody that could maybe build your website, and you could maybe start trading, you know, off it. And so I think there was a combination of you know, wholesale, and then eventually, you know, we got our own store in Edinburgh, a small store where we were designing out the back of it and trailing out the front of it, and wow. You were the Saturday boy and the designer and the, you know, and everything, you know. So
and so who was the team like back then? I know obviously you're,
back then, yeah.
you're sound like very much a one-man band trying to get it all off the ground yourself, but what, yeah. what were the pillars yeah. around you?
I think, you know, that there's a guy called Tom Cuddy who still works for me, actually. He was one of the sort of founding members back then, who sort of came as a graduate on placement from Heriot Watt University, Edinburgh, kind of Edinburgh's sort of textile course. And he came to me and sort of worked in the shop, and then, you know, and he's still with me now. So, you know, there was like three of us that were sort of, you know, production manager, I think, was the sort of kind of first sort of person you sort of brought in, and Tom and myself, and there was like three of us, you know, starting to really start designing and producing very locally at that point, you know, because it was cheaper to manufacture in the UK, and you could do small quantities, and you know, that's what I'd been brought up on. And as a designer, you're always molded by all of your past experiences. So, you know, my time at Caborn, you know, was very much, you know, about UK manufacturing, and that's, you know, what I came out, you know, because that was sort of the main role, I suppose, you know, as head of design there before starting my own brand. And you know, I think that kind of gave me the courage to start my own brand, because I kind of felt like it was a small team, and I was doing a lot at that point. So you kind of had the confidence then to kind of go, right, maybe I could do this myself.
Yeah. And I think we touched upon it when you're in Edinburgh. Do you feel like launching a brand there, that you're kind of closer to the authenticity, like you're closer to the mills, you're closer to, you know, the heritage of where most of the fabrics come from, as opposed to, say, if you're in London starting a brand? There are a lot of London brands that seem to hijack the name London and kind of tack it onto the end of everything. And then when you get to the fine print, you realize, oh, everything was just made in Portugal anyway. But yeah. That doesn't stop them from putting a picture of Big Ben on the front. And by the way, I'm including HP Source in that. Makes in the Netherlands, not even in London, but I digress.
That right, I didn't know that. I'll go, well,
yeah, look it up, it's on the back of the label.
I can't have a ban on brown sauce, unfortunately. That's not gonna, I need that. There'll be some issues, I think.
Up
here brown sauce is you know, is everything.
It's everything to me as well in this household, I think that's why.
I think, you know, Edinburgh in Scotland is a fantastic city and country to be in. And, you know, as we said, you know, like when you first started out, it was always, you know, you had to be down in London, surrounded by, you know, what was going on in London. And I do believe that definitely helped me, you know, in the early stages, and working for the people that I work for and getting experience. You know, it's all experience. And I did leave a little bit earlier and tried to sort of start doing things, and it didn't quite work out at that point. I didn't really have, you need to have the connections and I think and the experience to then come back and try and make a go of it, and, you know, have the experience of working with all these different people to be able to understand really how it works and to make it a success, I suppose. And yeah, it does, you know, it does frustrate me all of that, you know, where, you know, people are trying to pull the wool over people's eyes. You know, we're very lucky. There's not many other Scottish menswear brands. And that kind of gives us a bit of a unique place to be. And I've always been drawn by, you know, inspired by my memories of growing up in Scotland, or, you know, and even now, the places that you go on holiday in Scotland, or the traditions, or the history of, you know, what's happened in Scotland, not just in textiles, but in all different types of, you know, culture and art and design and architecture and all those kind of things. you know, I definitely think it gives you, you know, a bit of depth and you know, and a story to tell as well. You know, it's I think maybe it's sometimes a little bit difficult to tell a story when there's lots of other people telling a story. So, you know, the same story. So, you know, when we're telling a different story, it's easier for us, I suppose.
Yeah, I think so. As speaking as a consumer and somebody's that's worked in their own menswear shop selling other people's clothes, it always helps that the brand has a really good narrative, but comes from a place of honesty. Like there's a through line where you don't have to confuse people, where they'll see something and go, oh, I get it instantly. And there's no conflation here of like, why is it saying this? And then I go on the website and it looks completely different. So I think that helps. And I'll just give you a quick story. When I was working in a shop, there was a t-shirt company. There was a founder who'd lost his brother, I think, to some kind of obesity. So basically he just got too big and died of something. But on the shirt, it would always say, my armchair killed my brother, Neil. And you could lift up the t-shirt and there'd be like a little biography like written inside the t-shirt.
No way,
and yeah. It would just be like something that, you know, you would tell someone, they'll go, well, I don't know what that stands for. They look at the anagram and then you can give them like a little something for them to pass on and tell someone else. So I think that the importance of a story, especially with a brand, is it just can't be underestimated, I think.
No, I agree. I mean, it's you know, we're a Scottish brand. We don't claim to make everything in Scotland or in the UK. You know, we do make a lot of products in Scotland, and we do make a lot of products in the UK generally. You know, a lot of our production is in Portugal and in the Far East. You know, for the more technical and downfield product that is just impossible to make in Europe at you know, a certain price and a certain quality and all of those kind of things. But yeah, the narrative is really important and difficult to tell, you know, that story, you know, particularly when you know, we were a sort of 70% wholesale, 30% sort of direct brand. And when your product's in, you know, somebody else's store, you know, you're relying on good sales guys to tell that story. So that was difficult in the early days. You know, it's become much easier now with social media and Instagram and TikTok and all those kind of things, you know, where if you can tell the story and, you know, you can align all of those things. I mean, we've just launched our outdoor garments capsule collection for the first time, and we're not an outdoor brand. You know, we're definitely a traditional menswear brand, but we are able to play in that space because, you know, we're constantly, you know, getting people coming to Edinburgh that are about to go up north, or, you know, go up a mountain or do a Munro, or go traveling up the you know, the West, you know, the Highlands or the Hebrides or wherever they come. So generally they are coming to Edinburgh as a, you know, a first point of call before they go on to that. And I've always been interested in sort of technical fabrics and performance and all that sort of stuff, but that's become more and more interesting to me as I've gone on, you know, and I think it's a space that we want to play more and more in the future. And we've seen the success of you know, the outdoor garments collection that we've just launched. It was just a sort of small capsule collections of, you know, two fleece styles, a three layer tape seam jacket, which is waterproof, and a downfield jacket as well.
Yeah, I'm looking at one now. Sorry to talk over you. I'm looking at one now on the Instagram, which is kestin.co, by the way. We'll leave all the links on the show notes. It looks like an orange quilted, but kind of almost a honeycomb quilted.
Yeah, so it's onion quilted puffer jacket. And I think, you know, it's really that, you know, telling that story, I think, is really important. And, you know, I think, you know, I'm lucky enough that my wife, Jem, who's my partner and the business and partner in life and everything, she's come from a marketing background, you know, and I think once you get the two together, where you get great, you know, marketing and hopefully okay design, you know, and you put the two together, you can really create something, you know, really special. And you know, it's very much about, you know, right product, right time, telling the right story, you know, in an authentic way, you know, all of those things. Once, you know, that's the sweet spot, I suppose, is when you get all those kind of things coming together.
Yeah.
And that's been, you know, incredibly successful. And it's pushing me as a designer, you know, because, you know, I've always been very inspired by kind of workwear or military or Second World War, and an avid collector of vintage clothing and a big vintage archive. And that's definitely come from Kay Vaughan and my mum as well, who's a collector of vintage, you know, and I suppose, you know, seeing and getting into collecting, you know, particularly, I suppose, old Eddie Bauer stuff, you know, you can probably see that kind of influence coming through into some of our, you know, products. I think it's, if you get it all together at the right time, it's, you know, it's a winning formula.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
I mean, it looks great. I'm also interested. Your name's Kestin Hare. The brand's called Kestin.
Yeah.
How much front of house are you looking to be now, especially like on the social media front? I'm not seeing many images of you, is what I'm saying, but there must have been a point at the start of the brand where you had to propel everything, so you must have had to be in front and center. Have you kind of dialed it back a little bit since?
Well, it came through, we had a Japanese partner, and I'd worked quite a lot in Japan with my time with Nigel and Margaret Howe, and we always had Japanese partners within the business. So I was quite used to sort of working with the Japanese partners. And then, so when we teamed up with the Japanese, they said, well, we think, you know, the brand should be called Kestin Hare. And I thought that was a terrible idea. Thought it was, it's like, why would you want it? It sounded kind of like, you know, a little bit old fashioned for me at the time. It was sort of like, and I wasn't, you know, it wasn't like a designer. It wasn't like, you know, Paul Smith or, you know, like, you know, that kind of thing. And brands were normally kind of, you know, one word or, you know, that, you know, or they were called something that didn't really mean anything, but kind of associated with workwear or, you know, something like that. You know, it's so the idea of calling Kestin Hare was what initially took a lot of getting used to. And but it was the Japanese wanted to do it because of my past with working with Nigel Cable and being head of design there, and that was the idea with it. And then eventually we shortened it to Kestin, which is what everybody sort of knew the brand as, which is kind of easier. It's easier to brand. It's, you know, it's not as long. It's, you know, it's easier to say. It's easier to create a brand. And the good thing is, no, you know, it's easy to get a domain because nobody wants the domain, or nobody, you know. So in some ways, it's really lucky. I mean, growing up with the name in Scotland at a school, you know, you got Kirsty, Kestrel. Nobody could say Kestin. It was right. It was like a Norwegian name that my mum sort of tweaked. I think it was Kest, T-O-N, and then she changed it to I-N, and that was it.
Nice.
So she's kind of... She should be, you know, taking some sort of commission or something.
Yeah, like way ahead in the SEO charts. You know, she's just thinking like Gwyneth Paltrow and Beckham's calling their kids, you know, things that will stand out a bit more in the future. I love it. Well, you mentioned Japan there. So you have a license over in Japan under Kestin. Are you kind of in the
hand? We designed and produce, and we still do design and produce our collection, which is sold to Japanese stores over there. Yeah.
Do you get a chance to go out there much now?
I went. I used to go out there a lot before COVID, and I've not been out there since. I'm trying to plan to go out there next year, but I've not been out there for a while actually. But I grew up, you know, working with Japanese. I mean, I met Sam Segura, who, you know, was Margaret's partner and Nigel's partner when I was in my early 20s, you know, and Kai, who I worked with now, who's now at Snowpeak, and you know that so I've got a kind of long-standing relationship with working with Japanese, and I suppose our style and our aesthetic lends itself well and does well, you know, in the Japanese market.
Yeah, it's fascinating place. I've just did a cruise out there just recently, and so managed to go all the way around Japan, but also. I've been speaking to a friend who I've co-written his book for, and he's got a license out there, and he speaks really fondly of the time when he had a lot of concessions out there in Japan, and how it at times, I mean, he's too modest to say this, that you feel like a rock and roll star when you go and see and curate your own collections, and people will over the years remember you and bring back photos of like, oh, do you remember me when we met in your first collection here, and they'll like sign photos every year that they go. I mean, that it's
somebody drew a picture of me once, which I thought was like really nice, you know, like got presented with like this kind of drawing, you know, pencil drawing of myself.
Nice.
Which is incredible. Yeah. I mean, I'm generally, you know, Osaka and Tokyo, and I'm in and out, and I'm either seeing mills or, you know, showrooms or, you know, that type of thing. So I this time round, I definitely want to try and see some of the country, because I've never seen outside of Osaka or Tokyo and the bullet train in between, you know.
Kyoto, obviously, you gotta
Kyoto, that's top of the list. Yeah
Do the castle from Bond. Well, Kesten, I've only got a few minutes left on the call, but it's been fascinating talking to you. Thanks for walking us through the story. I wanted to quickly tap onto your designs. I know we're dialing back to earlier on in the conversation, but is there anything like from films, music, like iconography of your youth that are still prevalent in your designs today, do you think?
Yeah, I think there's lots of different things over the years, but I mean, I do remember when I started out working in I was at Northumbria Uni, and I was studying fashion, and there was an amazing independent, which is not there now, called Strand in Newcastle. And they were in Newcastle and Leeds, and Dave Dalby, who was kind of the buyer and owner of the brand, he used to, you know, he bought brands there. The first time I'd seen, like, you know, Prada Sport, and when Neil Barrett was creative director there, you know, and what they were doing now back then was the first time I'd seen like technical fabrics put into you know, traditional menswear shapes and styles, you know, and the quality of the fabrics and you know, probably all Italian, you know, Italian fabrics or Japanese fabrics. And you know, I think that was I saw then that, you know, you could potentially take, I like the twist that they put on, the technical twist on the traditional shapes or styles. So, and at the same time, I was working with Nigel Caborn, helping cut patterns when I was a student and going up there. So I had this kind of world of heritage, and I had this world of tech. And I think for me now, and I see it a lot in our design, you know, my designs, is that, you know, take workwear, you know, particularly take a workwear jacket and cut it in a technical nylon, or, you know, so there's always a bit of a twist to it. And I can only think that that's where that started to come from. And I became, you know, a fabric nerd and nut. And, you know, and when I was at Caborn, he was very purist, and I liked the technical, you know, the Lamontas or the Olmatex or the, you know, Miyoki or those kind of Italian mills that were real technical, and so the two together is I suppose where you see a lot of our kind of handwriting.
Interesting. Yeah, no, that's fascinating. It's I did a course, like a late fashion course, a night course, just a few years ago. Kind of had a bit of a change gear in career and wanted to become like a fashion designer, or at least get to know the fabric and how to manipulate fabric more and really get my head in the weeds. But it's honestly so much harder than people think. I think people have, from the outside, look at fashion design and think, well, let's just see how we can make a dress look, or make a suit look, or make something else aesthetically look, but they don't understand the minutiae of how fabric performs and what limitations yeah. certain fabrics have. And it's only when you get into those sort of things like seam allowance and you're like crying, yeah. or you're like, especially as a 44-year-old, I was like, I'm good. You know, it's too late in the game for me, but maybe for someone else. But yeah, so I'm always fascinated.
Maybe it's like anything. It's like you go, you know, you learn that. I mean, because I learned it so young, it kind of just sort of stuck with me. And I don't, I mean, you know, people say that to me. I find it very easy to kind of see what something's going to look from 2D into 3D, you know, and I can kind of visualize that really easily. And I can, if I can see a fabric, then I can visualize whether it's going to work or not, or whether it's going to be too lightweight or too heavyweight, or, you know, all those things very, very quickly, you know, what, you know, but I'm extremely dyslexic and, you know, so the there's lots of things that people find very easy that I really struggle with, you know, right. You know, that's, but my mom, you know, my dad was an architect and my mom was an interior designer. So I kind of grew up with this sort of, you know, world of being able to translate, you know, 2D into 3D and technical and tactile and you know, so it's kind of been drummed into me, you know, early on.
Nice. That kind of intense academy learning and the creative kind of elsewhere, like, you know, just harnessing whatever you can see into something palpable, I guess. And then your dad's very, you know, research driven, I guess, and everything has to be on paper. But
yeah, definitely.
Kesson, I'm going to have to let you go. You've got a life to get on with. I've got a cat that's getting soaked outside. He needs to be let in, poor fella. And people can go find the brand, obviously, in your stores around the world. Kestin.co, the website, and hang around on Instagram at kestin.co, I believe. But we'll leave all the links in the show notes. And again, Kestin, thanks so much for your time. Really great talking to you.
Nice talking to you.
You've been listening to the Menswear Style podcast. Be sure to head over to menswearstyle.co.uk for more menswear content, and email info@menswearstyle.co.uk if you would like to be a future guest on the show. Finally, please help support the show by leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.